Costa Kain, so happy together.
Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Who says Canada's dull and boring, never weird or whack? Wasn't me. We have lots of strange things here, and I'm not just talking about our crackhead mayor. But I rarely see movies as weird as a new horror movie opening across Canada today. This is a story about a med school student named Mary, played by Catherine Isabel, who is planning to become a surgeon, but she's flat broke. She can't even make her rent, so she brings her resume to a local strip bar and offers her services. But to her surprise, the skeezy characters there need her mind and her hands more than her body. So she's put to work as an underground secret surgeon. Soon she's a sought-after figure within the body modification set, and when something terrible happens to her, she leaves medical school and seeks revenge in her new guise as a regular Bloody Mary. But the police are on her trail. So the movie is called American Mary and was written and directed by the famous and notorious identical twin horror meisters or mistresses, the Soska sisters. And this is their second feature by the team who brought us the cult favorite Dead Hooker in a Trunk. And it's my great pleasure to have here in the studio at CIUT in Toronto, the Vancouver-based filmmakers, Jen and Sylvia Soska, to tell us more. Hi, Jen. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. Wow, that's a mouthful about the film. I was like, wow, you should write this stuff for us.
You have fantastic radio voice.
Thank you. But let's start with you. So which one is the evil twin?
That's a really good question. She's pointing at me, but I was born with a rare condition where if I'm not trying to look happy, I look pissed off. And, you know, she looks bright and sweet and bubbly, so more people will go over to her and be like, oh, you must be the good twin. It's kind of like those brightly colored, really deadly tarantulas. Just stay away from her. I mean, she has no mercy. She's like the Punisher, just not as merciful.
I got Jen a shirt that says I'm the evil twin just to take some of the heat off of me. Just like, gotta, you know, it's weird. Like, there's these two twins that killed people, but they both thought, made it seem like the other sister was doing it, so there was reasonable doubt. See, these are the things that go through my head, so I guess that's
on
why
a daily
I'm
basis
the evil twin.
But neither of you are blonde, so the good one has to be
dun,
darker.
Don. Yeah. I used to be blonde.
Oh, okay.
I was amazing because when
how
I was...
How recently was that?
Well, you know, no, that was probably about five, six... Oh, no, over 7 years ago. I just turned 30. The last 7 years has been like a little blink. I don't even remember it. But people used to talk down to me like I didn't understand English and I was really stupid. And I've always had a 4-point GPA and I always thought it was very interesting. Like, I look like this and I wear pink and my hair is blonde and now you think I'm some sort of an idiot. That's interesting.
Well, a lot of movies, especially horror movies, have the stereotypical female characters, that they have any female characters at all. There's like the bimbo, the slut, if I can use the term.
The virgin.
The virgin.
Yeah.
And the stupid people. And you rarely have a dynamic main character like this one. I mean, give me an example of some of the ones that inspired you. I'm thinking like Buffy, Lisbeth Salander.
The one that really inspired me a lot was Takashi Miike's audition had Ehi Shina playing a character called Asami. And have you ever had an opportunity to see that? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So I hacked that pretty hard. I loved that. I remember watching and people were like, wait till the last 15 minutes because, you know, it's terrifying. And I'm watching and I'm like, oh, this poor guy, he's just trying to date. That's kind of a lame way to meet a chick, but whatever. And then I remember he says he's going to call her and he doesn't. And she's just hanging over her phone, literally waiting for him to call. And I was like, this is so cool because you don't often see the insanity and capacity for evil in a very feminine way in this severely dark female character. And when I saw that, I was like, we should do that. We should mix this ideology of the final girl, which is developed from the virginal, like, please don't, if you have sex, you're going to get murdered. But now it can be like,
always.
Yeah. It was almost like, don't do this and maybe you'll survive. But now it's become more reflective of the modern woman. I was like, why don't we take that final girl and mix her with this antagonist, but a really dark, flawed character. And if it wasn't Catherine Isabel, I think everybody would really hate Mary. But Katie's so good at bringing the light and making it very relatable that you have this fun character.
Well, she's like the every woman or whatever in that she can t- talk and you just say, oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. She's a normal, ordinary person doing evil things.
She's very down to earth. I like to call her the thinking woman scream queen because, you know, there's the scream queen that's, you know, gets naked and covered in blood and, you know, undressed, covered in blood. Katie, I will say, looks absolutely phenomenal. Yes. And I won't say that we don't put her in blood at some point in the film.
Yes.
But, you know, they don't really have the power. And with the final girl, you know, it used to be that she was the sweet, virginal, you know, don't have sex type. And then Ridley Scott had Sigourney Weaver as Ellen Ripley.
Oh, for sure.
And that's where the Buffy type came from, too. Yeah, then finally you had not this girl that was on the defensive, but she was on the offensive.
Yeah. No, and so I love movies like that, but they're hard to find.
They're very hard to find. You don't see it too often. And even then, if you have one strong female character, all the other female roles tend to be like a bit of a throwaway.
You had most of the support roles also as women.
It was really important because Jen and I were proudly failed actresses. Mm-hmm. We started when we were seven, not because we were talented, just because there was two of us and the labor laws were a little lax for that.
Oh, for child roles?
For child roles, yeah. Definitely. But I found everything I auditioned for was not something I necessarily wanted to do. It would have been nice to be working. And I would talk to other actresses that were my friends, and they weren't necessarily going out for roles they were excited for. And I was like, what if we make every character in this kind of interesting? Let's make them unreal. Like, who's going to forget you're the Betty Boop woman, the one who's gotten like severe plastic surgery to emulate this cartoon character, which is played perfectly by Tristan Risk in the film.
So tell me about the, because it's about operations and stuff like the Betty Boop woman and other characters, does this have to do with dysmorphia, body? Is that like something afflicting many women right now, do you think?
I think that there is this unrealistic ideal, particularly in North America, of what beauty is. And it seems like there's a one type, and we can all say the blonde with big lips and big breasts and tiny waist and big ass and super thin and no lines on her face or
completely
whatever.
Hairless.
Completely. Yeah. And everyone can, you know, sketch out what this perfect woman type is. But nobody looks like that. Even the women with all the work done, it's Photoshop. It doesn't exist. And it's this unachievable ideal that, you know, we have shoved down our throats. And if we don't fit into this ideal of this kind of beauty, we're ugly. And you know, how many of us actually fit into that? And that goes in with cosmetic surgery versus body modification.
So is body modification just a further extension of plastic surgery, you think? Or?
See, I think body modification is almost a fresher way of self-expression than cosmetic surgery, because you're trying to fit into your own ideal of beauty. You can't, you know, fork your tongue or get little horns put on your forehead and say, oh, I'm trying to fit in. You're not trying to fit in. You're anarchist. You're trying to rise against. Or, you know, maybe you saw like a little lizard one day and you thought, oh God, that's really cute.
I wish I were a lizard.
Break your tongue.
I would love to be a lizard. It's like a car. You're customizing yourself. But what if you could only paint your car red? What if I want to have flames on the side? And I feel that's what body modification's like. There's these ideals of what's acceptable for elective cosmetic surgery. Whereas in body modification, a lot of this is illegal. You can't use anesthetic for these procedures, and a lot of people will go to places just to get the procedures done in an unsafe environment, and that's not what you want for something that goes into your body, something that's medical like that. And what does someone who looks like Catherine Isabel have in common with a guy who's like 7 feet tall, covered in tattoos, with a guy who's in body modification that has horns and a forked tongue? All of them are judged on appearance before anything. Mm-hmm. Jennifer and I own our own company. We make our own films, we produce, we write, we direct, but as soon as I come into a room, they see what I look like, and I have to fight that. And people are like, well, just change the way you look. And I'm like, I like this. I grew up on comic books and video games, and I didn't just want to play as those chicks. I wanted to be those chicks. So just let me do my thing.
Also, I guarantee we dress like this, even if we're not, you know, out here right now. I mean, warranted, I probably wouldn't be wearing an American Mary t-shirt at the moment.
You're on radio. No one cares what you look like right now, sweetheart.
That's not true. People dress for radio.
Really?
Yes.
You must have seen it a lot. Like,
oh, yeah.
Huh. That's bizarre. Well, I could be wearing anything.
It gives you a different voice. It gives you a different attitude.
Oh,
I know people who are all by themselves just speaking into the microphone, but they're wearing like a furry vest or something, or Viking horns or things like that.
See, you know, to put you in the mood. Sense. That's, you know, like character acting. You want to be in the mood of what you're doing.
And you certainly carry your personas with you, right?
Yeah, our personas are very much who we are as well. I mean, we just kind of wanted to extend it with branding ourselves like superheroes. You want to be able to see us and know there's the Twisted Twins.
That's what they look like. And I always thought Varga girls were so attractive, and Jennifer and I were teased and beat up, and we never fit in. And then all of a sudden, I kind of grew into my looks, and I was like, you know what? Just like drag queens say, if I don't like what I have, I'll decorate the hell out of it, and I'll be happy with it.
So I have to ask about dead ringers. So there's especially there's references. I think even in your movie, there are references where you're wearing the red surgical outfits. What else? Talk about it.
She does dabble in gynecology. Unofficially.
That's right.
But I will argue that is the most beautiful clitorectomy scene that's ever happened. And I remember people would read that scene because there is a scene where a woman... It's almost like
she neutralizes her gender.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's burning your bra, but with a scalpel. It's like, I don't want to be seen as a sexual object. I won't even have sexual parts on myself. And I thought that was really cool. And people would read the script and they'd be like, you can't do this. No one is going to be able to watch this. And then I would say, it's going to be so beautiful to look at. And they'd just be like, oh my God, what is she doing? She's insane.
It's impossible to do what we do without being inspired by David Cronenberg. Yeah. I mean, not only is he Canadian and just absolutely a national treasure, but you look at his films and yes, they're horror, but they really kind of escape definition. Dead Ringers for most people is a horror movie. For us, it's a drama. It's a heartbreaking character piece.
And with such a distinct image to the whole thing. I don't know if you've seen it. I saw it I saw it recently. I was like, oh my God.
Isn't it brilliant? Yeah. When I first started watching it, I thought Jeremy Irons and Jeremy Irons playing identical twins. What, you couldn't have gotten twins? And then I was like, absolutely.
Because you believe it.
So don't you want to do the remake, or now that you've made
No remakes ever.
Mr. Cronenberg said, I want you girls to remake it with twin sisters, absolutely I would. But unless he said, I want you to remake it, I'd be like, no, it's already been made perfect.
If David Cronenberg wanted me to wash his car, I would do it. I'd be like, all right, what kind of soap do you want, sir?
David Cronenberg wanted me to hide a body, I'd do it.
Oh, I'm really good at digging holes. I'm really good at it.
So what... When you're making a horror movie, what do you think has to be in a good horror movie?
Well, being horror fans, first and foremost, we want to put on something that people actually want to see. I mean, you see so many remakes, so many sequels, and we're kind of in a bit of a laugh track generation where we're told exactly how to feel, when to laugh, and, you know, the medicine cabinet scares, the sound ramps.
Opening the mirror.
Yeah, cat jumps out. Yeah.
Slowly looking out a window and then having an egg hit up against it. I mean, that's not horror. That's just like making someone feel calm and then throwing something in their face. That's just, you know... shock.
Right.
It has to have a purpose for existing, not just horror. Any film should have a reason to exist. On the surface, American Mary is a lovely character piece, and it's a very cool surgical horror. But if you stop and think about it, and you don't have to think that hard, there's a lot going on underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. There's the commentary on radical feminism, on the recession, the unachievable pursuit of the American dream, how you feel you have to get in a certain place in your career to be a happy human being. But what I like is horror movies with a philosophy, which Mr. Cronenberg taught me. And those movies, they have an impact. They're actually saying something. And it was funny, in your intro, you were saying how weird Canadians are. Isn't that the nice thing about Canadians?
Yeah.
Like, anybody I know who's in the States and they're like, oh, you're Canadian, they're like, I know some of you guys. You guys are just so weird. I'm like, that's the cool thing. We're not American. We're not, like, UK. We have this just eccentricity and this weird original way of looking at the world, and I like celebrating that.
I'm more worried about Americans saying, oh, you're Canadian, boring.
That's funny coming from them, because, you know, as a market, they're very conservative.
Yes.
Especially as far as films go. Yeah. And, you know, you can actually get away with more on American TV than you can get in films. And, you know, there's a few things in American Mary and a few things in Dead Hooker that they're like, oh, well, you can't show that. You can't show male front parts. And it's like, if I can show female front parts, I'm going to show male ones.
What was that, if I may ask?
That was a sub-incised penis that was infected due to masturbation.
I don't know if you could have said any of those things.
Photo or
no? It was an actual penis, and I felt so bad for my.
Oh, it wasn't infected. We worked with Masters Effects, and
that's why I wanted to like real life. What was it?
It was actually a piercing, a series of piercings that we made affected on an actual member.
Yeah, with a few pieces attached to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't use visual effects. We either used practical effects made by Masters Effects, or we had real members.
Can I just take a break and go?
I'm a girl. I don't understand the reaction because my poor cinematographer, Brian Pearson, I was like, I need a close-up. And he's like, how close? I was like, closer. And he's like, how close? I'm like, I want the camera as close to that penis as possible. And he filmed it. And I said, cut. And he's like, okay, we got that. Can I, and I was like, yeah, we're done. Okay, off you go. Thank you. That's a wrap on the penis.
I thought it was like a raw sausage that had been like.
No, it was a real.
Ketchup or.
No, it's a real one. And, you know, there's so much female nudity in horror films.
For sure.
Always trying to force male nudity in, you know, because we want to level the playing field.
Level the playing field, for sure, yeah. Yeah.
And you want that authenticity in it as well.
And I love that you react like that. That's fun. Like, I've watched it with different test screenings, and the girls, they start laughing, and the guys are like, just like when I saw Antichrist and Charlotte Gainsborough did that thing with the scissors, and my knees went together. I was like, oh my God.
You guys get defensive. They're like, what was that? Because they know what it was, and they're like, what
you're
was
talking about the Lars von Trier movie.
I was talking about
Lars always making those comedies.
Well, Jennifer and I have a joke on set because we're identical twins. We have the same interests, but we're very different people. We joke that she's the Joss Whedon and I'm the Lars von Trier. She puts the heart into the films and then I rip it out, which I really like.
Yeah, you do really like ripping people's hearts out. She'll write something that's just, you know, oh my God, I hope we can just barely get away with that. And then, you know, for the love of God, you have to tell a joke after.
That's
you
the pressure of Jen.
So, you need a moment of levity.
So what is the role of humor in your movie or in horror movies in general?
You know, we grew up reading a lot of Stephen King novels from a very early age, and he has this amazing dark sense of humor that is so ingrained in what he does that I grew up and still grew up thinking that true horror is supposed to be funny. There's supposed to be like dark moments. And, you know, anytime we have a screening of American Mary, there's some ha-ha jokes and then there's some, oh, you're a sick person ha-ha jokes. And you can pick them out in the crowd of which ones react to such and such or this line. One of the lines that we always get a laugh on, I can't repeat, but it's
Tessa, honey, don't be a
word
beep.
That I can't say.
And people die laughing at that. Well,
it got a standing ovation at Fright Fest.
In the UK, I couldn't believe how much they love that word.
Oh,
Jen loves it too. Jen loves it.
So, do you ever fear about alienating your audience by satirizing certain groups?
It's really funny because when I got introduced to body modification, I was so scared of it. It disturbed me so harshly. And my mom taught me that if anything scares you, it's a lack of education. So learn about it and you won't be scared anymore. And my fear turned to fascination, turned to admiration. And Jen and I would be on the websites and we'd pretend we had different procedures and we'd be asking different members of the community things.
Members.
And yeah. I had a really great experience because I started how most mainstream people start with being like, ew, ick, I don't understand. And then I was like, this is so cool. This is something we really need to get out there. But often, because I'm so obsessed with the story I'm trying to tell, I forget the face of the exact world, and I forget people don't all have the same opinion as I do. So it's a little bit of a harder sell. But then I have Jen, who's a normal, sensical human being who can be, while I'm talking about like sub-incised penises or suspensions from hooks, she goes over and she starts talking about the other way that we're going to, she's like, oh yeah, it's about that, but it's about something deeper than that.
I try to keep one foot in reality, although I'm on her side 100%. I will say, so if people are going to react like this, and she'll be like, but why? This is an issue that we need to tackle and we need to express. And I'm like, I agree with you. But just so you know, we're going to have to be prepared for this. You need to know both sides of your argument when you put it out. And, you know, I think horror is one of those things that it is for a niche group because there are some people, unfortunately, that will hear the word horror and say, I'm not going to see it. I can't handle horror films. But I think they're thinking slasher films because American Mary is a horror film you don't have to look away from.
No, in fact, I was going to ask because the camera seems to turn away at most of the goriest parts. You see the blood, but you don't see the yes. torture. It's not Gorno. It's not.
No, we wanted to very take a real departure for that kind of style of filmmaking because, you know, with our first film, it was all blood and guts and F-bombs. And with this one, we didn't want to rely on any of those tricks. But also since this was, you know, the first introduction for a lot of people into the world of body modification, aside from, you know, the Google image searches, which are totally out of context, we didn't want people to associate body modification with ew, yuck, and gross because we don't feel that it's those things.
So it's quite a movie, and it opens today. And I want to thank you, Jen and Sylvia, for talking about your movie.
Thank you so American much for having us.
American Mary. I've been speaking with the Soska sisters about their new film, American Mary, which opens across Canada today. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, for CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.